Hi, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And today we're starting our new series, A Catholic Response to Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. And I should have called it Behold, I Stand at the Door and Knock, because they often come to your door, don't they? And of course, that's a quote from Jesus in the book of Revelation. But as we start off, I just want to make a couple of initial comments. I am not here to attack or put down Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses as individuals. Many of them are incredible people of great character. But my beef is with a couple of religious organizations, one of which is based in Salt Lake City, Utah, called the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, sometimes called the LDS Church for short, and the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, better known as the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, why am I doing this series? A couple reasons. Number one, truth matters. Jesus said in the Gospel in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. Now, truth is a person. And Jesus also said, the truth shall make you free. We care about Jesus. We care about the truth about him and about his church too. So that's another reason to do it. The second reason, not just truth, but also love. If you love people, you're going to tell them the truth. And you can't let them remain in spiritual or intellectual darkness. And by the way, that's what Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses are trying to do for you when they knock on your door. They're very sincere people, and they think that they're sharing the truth with you. But I do believe that they're wrong. They're sincere, but they're sincerely wrong. And it takes much more than sincerity to make it in life. It does take truth. The suicide bombers of 9/11, they were very sincere in their beliefs. In fact, they're willing to die for their beliefs and take a lot of other people with them. But they were sincerely wrong. Their beliefs were not true just because they really, really put everything into them. And the same is true with these groups as well. And then the third reason why we're doing this is really to promote a rescue mission. We want to rescue our fellow Catholics who have been sucked into these groups. In fact, many of their members, many Mormons, present-day Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses are ex-Catholics. We also want to rescue the Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses themselves from a false and spiritually dangerous group of organizations. So this is why we're doing this series. And we're going to share with you what Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses believe and how you can help them. So let's start with the Jehovah's Witnesses. And let me tell you a little bit about them. And I think if we look at their history, it'll help us to understand a little bit about what they believe. Now about 60 years ago, the Jehovah's Witnesses numbered fewer than 100,000 members. But now, there are several million members of the Witnesses all around the world. They don't have churches. They have something called Kingdom Halls instead. Perhaps you've seen one in your own community. In fact, odds are there is a Kingdom Hall within a few miles of your home. And within that Kingdom Hall, by the way, there is a map. And on that map is your residence. In fact, if I were to ask you to raise your hand right now, obviously I can't see you here on the radio, but I would imagine that a huge percentage of you listening, of all the millions listening right now, have received a personal visit from the Jehovah's Witnesses within the last year. And that's really what they want to do. Every year, they want to go door to door and reach every single person in their territory with their message. Now, they're incredibly friendly people. They have great character. In fact, one person was recently telling me that their cousin left the Catholic Church to join the Jehovah's Witnesses because they personally cared for her after the death of her husband. She was in a really rough place, and they provided her a lot of emotional support and care. And in fact, that convinced her to leave the Catholic Church and join the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, simply because a person is kind and loving, and that's obviously a good thing in and of itself, but that doesn't mean that their beliefs are true. The congregations of the Jehovah's Witnesses are pretty small, and normally there's about 200 or less people in these Kingdom Hall congregations. And again, Most Jehovah's Witnesses used to be either Catholic or Protestant. They are converts to the Witnesses. So the sincerity is there. The zeal that they have can't be denied. Many of the Jehovah's Witnesses spend about 60 to 100 hours each month going door-to-door evangelizing. So no matter how peculiar their doctrines may be, and they certainly are, we have to compliment them on their zeal, on their determination. We as Catholics can learn something about that from them. Are we as fired up about the true faith, about the Catholic faith, as they are about their beliefs? Do we have as much of a burning passion to evangelize for souls? But again, it takes more than sincerity to make it in life. It takes truth. St. Paul might have said this concerning them. Now, he said this about another group in the Bible, but it might as well have been said about the Jehovah's Witnesses today when St. Paul wrote, "I can testify about them that they are zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge." Romans 10, verse 2. And this is really why we're doing this series, not just to enlighten you about what Jehovah's Witnesses and also Mormons believe, but so that we can enlighten them about the true faith. It's actually uncharitable, it's unloving to leave someone without the truth about God when we're in a position to tell that person what the truth is. But I would say just a couple things when it comes to speaking with these missionaries at your door. It's not always a good idea to do that. It's not always a good idea. Number one, if you are unsure about your Catholic faith, if you are not sure why you believe what you do, why you're a Catholic, what you believe and why you believe it, if you're not rock solid on that, do not get into a discussion with these people. They're very well trained. They know how to respond to common objections that Catholics offer when they present their beliefs. So if you're not convinced utterly about your Catholic faith, I don't recommend getting into a discussion with them. Number two, you've got to make sure that you are in an emotionally healthy state when you engage with them. Just like that lady I spoke of a couple minutes ago who suffered the loss of her husband, she was in an emotional downtime, and that made her very susceptible to the advances of the Witnesses, because they were very kind to her. They took care of her needs, made meals for her. And a lot of her Catholic friends weren't doing that. And she felt that she was kind of abandoned by her parish community. So if you're in an emotionally fragile state, you're very susceptible sometimes to the advances of a false religious system that can claim to solve all of your problems. And who wouldn't want that, right? So those are just a couple of caveats that I want to mention off the top. It's not always wise to engage with them, depending on your situation. I'm Cale Clark, and you're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. We're looking at a new series called A Catholic Response to Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. So right now I want to talk about, again, the Jehovah's Witnesses. And let me tell you a little bit about their history, because, again, when you know their history, it's going to make a lot of their peculiar beliefs, which we'll get into, you'll say, oh, okay, that makes a little bit more sense to me now. And so I want to give credit where credit is due here. I am definitely building upon, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, people like Ron Carlson, the late Ron Carlson, who wrote and spoke so much about the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons. Jim Burnham, who's guest hosted a lot of programs on Relevant Radio. He's written a great series called Beginning Apologetics. He's got some great material on Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses, and I'm building on his work too. And also the fine apologists from Catholic Answers have also done us a great service in this area, written a lot about these two groups. So I'll be at times quoting them and certainly presenting to you what I've learned from them and others too. So let's take a look at the history of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, there are basically two main influences on their founding. Number one, Protestantism. The founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses was a man named Charles Taze Russell, and he came from a Protestant background, so he carried a lot of Protestant error and baggage into the Jehovah's Witnesses that he started. Rejection of the papacy, rejection of the Eucharist and other sacraments, rejection of the Marian teachings of the Church. So a lot of Protestantism got into the mix here. The second major influence on the founding of the Jehovah's Witnesses was the Adventist movement, Adventism in general. And so really Adventist groups, and there are more groups than just the Jehovah's Witnesses, Adventist groups are all concerned about the second coming or the second advent of Jesus Christ. That's why they're called Adventists. And there were three major new religions that arose in the United States in the 1800s. And they're all very American in nature. Mormonism, the Jehovah's Witnesses, and the Seventh-day Adventists. They're also obviously part of the Adventist movement. So the United States figures heavily in their theology. Think about this. Joseph Smith, who founded Mormonism, he believed that Jesus would return to set up the New Jerusalem in Independence, Missouri. I'm sure it's a fine city. I've never been there. But it's very American-centric in its outlook. And of course, that was a failed prophecy. So all of these groups, the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Seventh-day Adventists, all of these groups were discredited when their predictions, and they had a lot of very detailed predictions, especially in the case of the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Seventh-day Adventists, about when the second coming of Jesus would happen. It failed to happen when they said it would, and this discredited their group quite a bit. They had to change course. Now, the sect that is now known as the Jehovah's Witnesses, again, was started by a man named Charles Taze Russell. He was born in 1852, and he actually worked in Pittsburgh as a haberdasher for a period of time. He came from the Protestant background known as Congregationalism. But when he was 17 years old, he tried to convince an atheist to become a Christian, but the opposite happened. He actually kind of got convinced by the atheist. Now Russell never became an outright atheist himself, but he did become an agnostic. And so he kind of was drifting for a period of time, not really sure what he believed. And some years after that, he attended an Adventist meeting. Again, this movement was really sweeping the United States in the 1800s. And he was told at this meeting that Jesus was going to be returning at any time right about now. And then he got really, really interested after that in reading the Bible. Now, really the guy who started the Adventist movement really going was William Miller. William Miller was a really flamboyant preacher, and he actually predicted that the world was going to end in the year 1843. Well, when 1843 came and went, and the world was still there, he quote-unquote discovered a mathematical error in his calculations. He said, I was actually wrong. It's actually going to end in 1844, not 1843. I was off by a year. Well, when his prediction again failed, a lot of people became quite disillusioned, as you might expect, and they kind of drew back from the Adventist movement. But a small little remnant led by a woman named Ellen White, Ellen G. White, went on to form what is now the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that's another story for another day, but let's keep going with the background of the Jehovah's Witnesses. So it was this kind of Adventism that was a little bit diminished in its strength because of these failed predictions. That's what influenced Charles Taze Russell, who founded the Jehovah's Witnesses. And he took the title pastor unto himself, even though he himself never graduated from high school. And in 1879, he began the Watchtower, what would later be known officially as the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, and that's the teaching organ of the Jehovah's Witnesses. In 1908, he moved the headquarters of the Watchtower to Brooklyn, New York, and that's where it has remained ever since until the present day. Now, before he started his career as a religious evangelist and founder of the Watchtower, Charles Taze Russell was a bit of a salesman. He promoted something that he called miracle wheat, and he sold it at $60 per bushel, which was quite pricey for the time. Now, he claimed it was going to grow five times as fast as regular wheat did, but it didn't. It actually grew less well than the usual stuff, and he was actually sued. He was taken to court over this, and that fact became well established in testimony. Later on, he marketed a fake cure for cancer. And he also sold something that he called a millennial bean. And as one commentator said, he probably got that name because it took 1,000 years to actually sprout. I'm not sure about that. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm Cale Clark. So continuing on with the history of the Jehovah's Witnesses, Charles Taze Russell taught his followers some very strange teachings indeed, such as hell doesn't exist. There is no eternal hell. And that's music to the ears of a lot of people. It's kind of the opiate of the masses. What happens to unsaved people? Well, they just get annihilated. They're just kind of snuffed out. Now, he actually picked up this teaching from the Adventists. He didn't believe in the existence of the Trinity. He only said that the Father is God, who he called Jehovah. And of course, Jehovah is one of God's names in the Old Testament. So he says only the Father is God. Jesus is not God. In fact, he taught that Jesus was actually St. Michael the Archangel. That's something that you probably don't know, but Jehovah's Witnesses teach that Jesus is the same person as Michael the Archangel. They don't believe that the Holy Spirit is a person, a divine person. They simply believe that the Holy Spirit is a force. It's kind of a Star Wars theology. May the force be with you. They don't believe in the immortality of the soul. And they taught, Russell and his followers taught, that Jesus would return in the year 1914. So this is very reminiscent of William Miller, who founded the Adventist movement. Well, when 1914 came and went, and still no Jesus in sight, Russell modified his teachings a little bit, and he claimed that, well, actually, Jesus did come back to Earth in 1914. We just didn't see him because his return was invisible. That's right. Jesus returned invisibly and came to Brooklyn, New York, to set up the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society. Now, he was going to visibly return later, but at some point in the near future, still very soon, though, and when he returns visibly, it's going to result in the final conflict between God and the devil, between the forces of good and the forces of evil, and of course, God will be victorious. And this final conflict is known to the Jehovah's Witnesses as the Battle of Armageddon, which is another biblical name that is mentioned. But at any rate, almost everything that the Witnesses teach to this day centers around this doctrine of the Battle of Armageddon. So Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the JWs, died in 1916. His successor was a person named Joseph R. Rutherford. His nickname was Judge Joseph Rutherford. Now, he was a lawyer. He was born in 1869. He was brought up as a Baptist and eventually converted to the Watchtower movement, became a Jehovah's Witness, and he became the legal counsel to the Watchtower Society. Now, he never was a real judge, but he took the nickname Judge because when he was an attorney, he substituted in for a judge on one occasion. So that's why he was called Judge Rutherford. Well, at one time, Judge Rutherford said that Charles Taze Russell, the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses, he said he was, you know, almost right up there with St. Paul as an evangelist, as a preacher of the gospel. But later on, he kind of changed his mind about that a little bit. In fact, he wanted his own writings to kind of supplant or take over from the writings of Charles Taze Russell. So he actually let Russell's books go out of print. And it was Judge Rutherford who coined the slogan that's very famously associated with the Jehovah's Witnesses, "Millions now living will never die." Now, this slogan meant that some people who were alive in 1914 in that generation would still be alive when the Battle of Armageddon finally comes about and the world will be restored to a paradise state, according to their teaching. Well, in 1931, Judge Rutherford changed the name of the group officially to the Jehovah's Witnesses. And this came from the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 43:10. Now, here's what Isaiah 43:10 says in the New World Translation. Now, this is the official Jehovah's Witnesses Bible translation. Nobody else uses it except for them. I'll tell you about this in just a minute. But Isaiah 43:10 in the New World Translation says, "You are my witnesses," is the utterance of Jehovah, "even my servant whom I have chosen." So that's where they get the name Jehovah's Witnesses from. So what Judge Rutherford did as head of the organization, he sent out their missionaries door to door with portable record players, phonographs. And what happened? Well, all they had to do was ring the doorbell. They didn't have to say too much. And they would put on a record of Judge Rutherford speaking. And yeah, so it was pretty easy in those days to be a Jehovah's Witness missionary. Just let him do all the talking. He was very anti-Catholic. On his radio program and in pamphlets that he wrote, very virulent anti-Catholicism was present. And even to this day, Watchtower publications such as Awake magazine and The Watchtower, every once in a while, there still will be some anti-Catholic pieces in there, but it tends to be a little bit more subdued. It's not as overtly anti-Catholic as it used to be. Well, in the year 1925, Judge Rutherford said that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were going to return to Earth. And he, of course, that's a pretty big event if the old patriarchs are coming back. So he needed to set up a place for them to live. So he bought a mansion named Beth Sarim in San Diego, California. He moved into the mansion himself. Strangely enough, the patriarchs didn't show up. He died in this mansion in 1942. He also bought a car with which to drive around the resurrected Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But again, he was usually by himself because they didn't come. The Watchtower Society very quietly sold the Beth Sarim Mansion some years later to cover up this embarrassing failed prophecy. Well, Judge Rutherford, after he died in 1942, he was succeeded as head of the organization by Nathan Homer Knorr, who died in 1977. Now, Nathan Homer Knorr joined the Witnesses when he was a teenager, and he actually kind of worked his way up through the organization. He got rid of the portable record players, and he insisted that all the Watchtower missionaries were rigorously trained. They had to take courses. They had to be trained in door-to-door evangelism, how to answer questions and doubts that people had. And this is really how the Witnesses started their practice of delivering personal testimonies about, you know, what this organization has done for them. And this it's very hard to argue with a personal testimony. Well, the Bible did not obviously support a lot of the doctrines of the Watchtower Society, so that's why they had to come up with their own translation of the scriptures called the New World Translation. And again, I can't overemphasize this enough. There's no other group in the world that uses this Bible translation. The only reason we found out who some of these people were is because some people left the Jehovah's Witnesses and revealed the names, leaked them out. So four of the five members who we found out about who translated this this particular version of the scriptures, four out of the five have zero credentials as Bible translators. And the fifth person, well, he studied non-biblical Greek, because, of course, the New Testament was written in Greek, but it's written in a certain type of Greek called Koine Greek. But he only studied non-biblical Greek for only about 2 years. So these guys really don't have the chops to be doing any Bible translating. But the reason why the Jehovah's Witnesses produce this New World Translation, it's the only one they'll use when they come to your door and they want to talk to you about the scriptures, is because it actually backs up their beliefs, because they mistranslate several passages of the scriptures. For example, this is probably the classic example, John chapter 1, verse 1, the very beginning of the Gospel of John. In the New World Translation, it says, "And the Word was a God." Now, every other Bible translation in the world, Catholic or Protestant, doesn't matter, and also the Greek original text, I might add, that's not what it says. It actually says, "And the Word was God." Now, obviously, the implication that they want to deny is that Jesus is God. So they need to prove that Jesus is only a creature, not God. So the Jehovah's Witnesses actually have a lot in common with maybe the most dangerous heresy in the history of the church, Arianism. And Arius was a renegade bishop who taught that Jesus was only a creature. He might have been the first creature, might have been the greatest creature, but he's not God. And so that's essentially what the Jehovah's Witnesses believe about Jesus, that he is not divine. So beware of the New World Translation. It's not an accurate translation of the scriptures, but it does back up their peculiar beliefs. Now, let's talk a little bit about what happened to the Battle of Armageddon. Well, after Nathan Homer Knorr passed away, the next person to head up the Jehovah's Witnesses was Frederick Franz. Now, Franz was the best theologian that they had. And in fact, he had to do some pretty creative theologizing when the Jehovah's Witnesses had been predicting for many years that the Battle of Armageddon would take place in 1975. Now, when 1975 came and went and the battle didn't happen, Franz was the one who was tasked with the job of finding an explanation. So here's how they did it. Well, the Jehovah's Witnesses believe that Adam was created in the year 4026 BC, and that human beings were allowed to have 6,000 years of existence until the Battle of Armageddon. Well, this, where'd they get this number from? It's based on what they call a creative week, in which 6 days, each of 6 days is equal to 1,000 years. And the Sabbath, or the seventh day, would be the beginning of the millennium. So that, you know, if you use your math skills there, that gives 1975 as the year Armageddon would take place. Well, how Frederick Franz got around this was, he said, well, Armageddon is actually going to come 6,000 years after Eve was created. And so when 1975 came and went, they basically adjusted their chronology a little bit. They said, well, we don't know exactly how long after Adam's creation Eve came onto the scene. It might have been months. It might have been years. And at any rate, they were able to use this to stretch the 1975 date to some undetermined time in the future. So now we're just going to have to wait for the Battle of Armageddon to take place, but it's, yeah, it could be right around the corner. Another problem here, 1914, remember that? Remember, they said that the final battle was going to take place during the lifetime of millions of people who were alive in the year 1914. Well, obviously most of the 1914 generation is no longer with us, so they had to change their doctrine once again. Now they simply say that Armageddon is going to take place soon. They no longer tie it to a particular date or a particular generation of people. So we have just scratched the surface here when it comes to the Jehovah's Witnesses. Now that you know a little bit about their history, what they teach will make a little bit more sense to you. So in the next episode, we're going to go over some of their peculiar doctrines, why they think that Jesus isn't God. They don't think that Jesus was resurrected from the dead. They think that he's the same person as St. Michael the Archangel. Why is it that Jehovah's Witnesses refuse blood transfusions? Why is it that they say that only 144,000 people are going to heaven? And I'm also going to walk you through how they make a convert, how they take you from the time when they knock on your door to becoming a full-fledged Jehovah's Witness yourself, how they want to get you through that process. We'll talk to you about how they make converts so that you're aware of it and what life as a Jehovah's Witness is really like. That'll all be on the next episode of The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. So this is a series we're doing called A Catholic Response to Mormonism and Jehovah's Witnesses. So we're talking about Jehovah's Witnesses right now. We'll talk about Mormonism after that. So please spread the word, share it with a friend. You can download the podcast at relevantradio.com and the Relevant Radio app, wherever you get your podcasts. Spread the word. We'll see you in the next episode.